It's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here, and it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
You know my work and you've given it a lot of thought, and I don't normally get such good questions, to be honest.
Your podcast is the one that I listen to when I want to listen to an interviewer who has A, actually read the book she's asking questions about, and B, asks really interesting, insightful questions about it, and I think that's really special.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
It was a good chat, great chat. You're a good interviewer.
It's an absolute pleasure to be interviewed by a very articulate person such as yourself.
I've so enjoyed listening to the podcast. Truly, I love it. And it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
That's brilliant what you do. Honestly, I'm so in awe, and we need more word nerds like yourself.
Today I welcome Deborah Abella. Deborah writes books about spies, ghosts, soccer legends, and children living in a flooded city, battling sea monsters and sneaker waves. Today we talk about the Grimsden trilogy, inspired by people around the world not taking enough care of the planet. When the city of Grimsden floods, a group of kids are left in the ruins along with sea monsters, flying machines, and sneaker waves. Listen to Deborah and I chat about dystopian novels, young adult fiction, and climate change. I'm your host, Danny V.
Welcome to the Words and Nerds podcast, Deborah, and thank you so much for joining me to talk about the Grimsden trilogy, including books Grimsden, New City, and Final Storm.
Oh, hey, Danny, that's a pleasure.
For readers who haven't yet started the series, or they might be halfway through, can you give us a quick 20-second elevator pitch of what the series is about?
Kids who survive in a climate-changed world with their inventive ways and their loyalties and their courage.
I love that. Very concise, too.
Gosh, it was right on the spot. I suddenly felt like I was under pressure. Like the principal had called me to their office and asked me to deliver a speech. It was like, oh, I don't know.
It's so funny. It's the first question I've been asking, just so, you know, listeners, if they don't know the book, they can get a little bit of a feel for it before we start talking about it. And authors always find that the most difficult question. Just think, come on, it's your book.
Oh, good. So does it mean it'll get easier from now on?
I think so, yes, because people aren't expecting the first question to be so simple. They're like, what? What are you asking me? Now, I trawled your website, which I absolutely loved. I loved the videos. I loved the lighting when you were reading, how it was all dark around you and you had this spotlight on you. I mean, I digress, but I really liked it. And I liked how you said the initial premise for the book was a comment on climate change and how important it is we take climate change and caring for the earth seriously. And I'm very interested to know how this passion or this concern ended up as a trilogy.
Yeah, it literally wasn't a book. It was me, perhaps when I first started thinking about this trilogy 12, 13-ish years ago, it was me just being a cranky old lady, and it was never going to be a book. Essentially that the science of climate change was coming out saying, look, the world is changing, and either people agreed or didn't agree with that. But what a lot of people didn't want to know is it's kind of our fault, and it's the way that human beings are living. And I just thought, why would you refuse to listen to the scientists? I have a lot of kind of scientist friends, I have a lot of academic friends, but also I think science is amazing. And if anyone knows any scientist, they want 5 bits of proof before they believe anything, you know, before they believe the sun is shining. Okay, I can see the sun, but I want something else that's going to show me that it's, you know, they're not easy to convince people, you know, they need a lot of facts. And we just went through a time where governments all around the world just didn't want to listen to the scientists, even though they were saying, if we keep going the way we're going, you know, burning coal, burning fuel, chopping down forests, you know, we're going to heat up the planet to such a degree that it's really going to cause complete havoc with our weather, with flora and fauna. It's just, you know, we're kind of heading for not a great path. But, of course, the beautiful thing about the scientists was they were saying, we just kind of need to adjust the way we're living, and let's use natural resources like solar power and wind power, and let's get more clever about the cars we drive and how we get around. And I also thought this was kind of not just let's all be careful, but hey, let's actually be way more clever and way more cleaner about how we live. And it kind of came to a head for me when we had a chief scientist in this country. It was this incredible scientist who you would never even know we had a chief scientist until she finally came out to the media and said, I've been receiving death threats because I've been saying climate science, wow. You know, climate change. Yeah, and I thought, whoa, wait a minute, this person doing their job is suddenly getting death threats, that, you know, their family is suddenly getting death threats. And it just felt like it tipped over into a really dark place. And anyway, so this is all me getting cranky, right? And then it really just kind of sunk into my skin, and I thought, you know what, I know kids care about this, and I know kids take this very seriously, but I also know this is a real worry for kids, and I want to kind of write a novel about, you know, this Grimsden is essentially these kids living in a flooded city, and they survive in the city by their really clever inventions, their complete loyalty to each other, their bravery when they really don't think they can be brave enough, and I added flying machines and sea monsters and girls who are good with swords and evil harbour lords, and, you know, made it kind of adventurous and stuff. But it was seriously my sort of call to arms of, come on kids, we can do this, let's sort of us lead the way. And and ironically, of course, we've come to a time, you know, three books later and sort of 10-12 years later, where, you know, I think kids kind of are leading it. And we've got Greta Thunberg, the young Swedish student who is traveling around the world sort of talking about, you know, climate change. I mean, she's taking boats because she doesn't want to take planes anymore, because we need to stop taking planes. And it's so it kind of, the trilogy started with me getting cranky and then thinking, actually, I want to write a novel about this, and coming up with those three lovely ingredients that you need, whether I need to know that exists, so that the novel has a solid grounding, you know, so characters are setting and something going wrong. So it was just then so much fun to write, just purely as an author making lots of trouble for their characters, and with feisty, amazing, beautiful characters who I just love.
So much of that is so interesting to me and baffling as well, because, as you said, scientific evidence has always been taken as, you know, true, because you need, yep, a lot of evidence and peer-researched articles, yes, etc. And it just seems like this issue has become so divisive, and we've just gone, yeah, oh, I believe in science, but not that science.
Yes, this was what was absolutely just doing my head in. I thought, well, no, wait, you can't pick and choose what facts you believe and what science you believe. And it just did not make any sense to me. And just on a pure general kind of us living as human beings here, we need to take care of this planet. I think there are two big things we need to do in this world, and it's to take care of the planet and to take care of each other. And then beyond that, we can do lovely things as well. But I think there are two big things that we need to do as humans.
It's a beautiful sentiment. And if everyone lived by it, it'd be a much better world, I think. Ah,
wouldn't it?
And it's interesting, one last thing before we do actually go into the book, I just found this such an interesting issue to explore. And I thought, you know, it shouldn't be divisive, because like you said, we don't have to, it's not doomsday, we just have to adjust a few things that we're doing, and yep, then we can do a better job of taking care of the planet and each other, and it should be something that brings us together. So it's very, yes, interesting how it's, and I also think, and I looked at your website and a couple of the facts about what we can do better, and I found it so interesting, and I dare say, I wonder how many people listening know that it takes 7 litres of water to make 1 litre of bottled water. Like, how many people know that? I didn't know that.
I know, it's, and when I found out that statistic, I thought, okay, I'm going to be repeating that one, because we, especially in our major cities, we've got free, beautiful tap water coming out of the taps. And I if I go to schools, or if I'm at a conference, or if I'm anywhere on a plane or something, I'll take my water bottle everywhere, because it just is good for the planet and it's good for us, and it's free from our taps and it's good quality water. So, yeah, so just stuff like that, and just the plastics we need. And I think that it's slowly sinking in as well, that we need to be really, really conscious about the amount of plastic we use in our everyday life, and as much as we can take, you know, I carry in my bag when I go to schools or I'm traveling around, I have a fork in there. I usually have a pocket knife in there. I have my water bottle. I usually have like a thermos, some kind of thermos as well, so that I can, if I am out and about, I am not allowed anymore to buy, you know, tea and takeaway cups. I don't care how desperate I am for a cup of tea, and I love my tea. If I've forgotten to bring my keep cup, I don't get it. It's kind of like my punishment to myself. Well, you need to be more organized next time, Deb. So I think it's sinking in that we've kind of been doing stuff for a long, long time in a certain way, and we're adaptable. human beings are incredibly flexible and adaptable. And so I think it is generally now sinking in and becoming, I think, to the point where kids today, when they're kind of our age, they it'll just be second nature to them to not accept a plastic bag, to not drive petrol-driven cars. I have so much hope for the kids today.
Absolutely. And it is. I've spoken to a lot of authors about them writing this in their work, not as, you know, a lesson, but just as something in the background of the adventure of the story, because that's where you've got to start, isn't it? You've got to start with kids.
Yes, I think so too. And it still, of course, has to be a gripping story. It still has to be a rollicking tale or just a well-told, beautiful drama or a funny book, whatever it is. And that other stuff on the periphery just kind of hopefully gives a truth to the story.
Now, it's been described as part dystopian, science fiction, fantasy and adventure. Is that how you envisioned it before you wrote it?
No. Can I tell you, I'm the worst kind of strategist or kind of planner in a way for what I write. I do, and especially with Grimms, and it came out of such a place of frustration. It's good that your books and your work come from a place of passion, right, and excitement. But this was just, I am so cranky about this. I'm gonna write a novel about something big that goes wrong because we just didn't take enough care. So that when it came out, I was actually a bit surprised that people called it dystopian. I thought, is it? did I just write a dystopian novel? Never meant to. Okay.
But that's what's ahead of us if we don't listen.
And also, I guess I resisted the word dystopian because I want to set it in a world that's only kind of like it's not like 50 years in the future or 100 years. It's kind of just in the future because it kind of could be what we're facing right now. Like, I didn't want it to feel like science fiction. I wanted to feel like this is our gorgeous world and we may risk messing it up if we don't do stuff right now.
Absolutely. Now, you just said how unplanned a writer you are. So I want to ask about the arc of a series, because a lot of people say that obviously it's hard enough to plan one book. So when you have a trilogy in mind, how do you plan the arc of the characters and the plot to sustain three books?
Oh, there's no planning. I feel... Because it wasn't a series. Like, I wrote Grimsden and kind of got it out of my system a little bit, and then had the lovely excuse of going into schools and saying, hey, we need to take better care of the planet. And the kids are like, yeah, we do. And but what happened at the end of Grimsden, because these kids are trapped in a flooded city, and I leave the end of the book where it looks like they are about to leave. They're literally in their beautiful home in Grimsden at the top of this building, and they hear choppers coming, and it's like, oh, we're about to leave. And then I ended the novel, and then what happened was just fascinating. I just got all these really angry emails from kids. Like, I've been writing for a long time, right, like nearly 20 years, and normally if a kid writes to you, they go, you know, dear Deb, thank you so much for your book, I really enjoyed it. But just this barrage of really cranky emails just came at me saying, what do you mean they might leave Grimsden? Well, do they or don't they? Where do they go? And like, for a long while I just wrote back and said, well, they don't go anywhere. Like, it's a novel. It ended. I don't know what happened next, you know. And after a while, you know, I kind of got swept up in their questions and thought, well, actually, yeah, where do they go? And so it is a complete accident that there was a book two. And so I then had to think about it kind of in retrospect. Well, what is the arc? where will these kids go next? And then the same thing happened when I wrote the second novel, which is New City. At the end of that, kids went, yeah, great, thanks for writing that. And what's going to happen in the third book? And and again, I said, nothing, there is no third book. And after a while, partly too because I love hanging out with these characters, partly because I thought I'd told the story I wanted to tell. I didn't know there was any more story left. But, of course, there always is. Characters don't, in a way, stop existing because the novel ends, as we all kind of all of us writers kind of know. And so I just then approached my publisher and said, could I write one final book? And she sort of looked at me a bit weird and said, really, you don't want to write something else? And I said, look, I know it's weird because there's actually quite a few years between each book. So this, I cannot tell you how not planned this was and how no publisher would, like if I approached them and said, you know, can I write three books, but can I write it over a period of 9 years? Like there's no way they would sign that up. It was, that would just be a silly thing to propose. And so the final book, I was really keen to write, though, after a while, because I thought, you know, between getting cranky about Grimsdon and then writing Final Storm, I think the world has changed. I think our awareness has changed. I think even though governments, I think, are slow still to come to the party and pass legislation, I think there's Greta Thunberg, the young student, there's student strikes all over the world. But I also think there are companies saying, actually, what can we do? You know, rather than relying on legislation, what can we do? And there's some really, really cute things. Car companies are doing lots of clever things, transport companies. But also, you know, there are clothing companies like Tommy Hilfiger who ask the same question. And they've come up with these solar-powered jackets. And they're great. If you look it up online, it's so cute. You put on the, you know, your big coats and you go for a walk in the sunshine. And there are these solar panels in the back of the jacket. So you are being charged as you're walking, you know, in the sunshine, and there are cables in your pocket where you can charge your devices. And wow. So I just think, you know, there's just little examples of how really when human beings are clever and inventive, it's just astounding. And so I wanted the last novel to be more about these are the clever, clever things we're doing, you know, to help kind of look after this planet. And, of course, the clever things in my book are being kind of driven by the kids as they create hoverboards, and there are rescue eagles and there are robots, and there's all sorts of, you know, really clever things being done to save the planet. There's a new bad guy and an old bad guy and a sea monster and ice storms. You know, there's still a lot of like trouble because that's, you know, that's our job as authors. But I wanted it also have this kind of nice stream of there are people doing amazing things.
And the beginning of Final Storm struck me a little bit as a modern version of Tomorrow When the War Began, because we're talking about climate change, and back then, you know, I was talking about war. But when I just opened the first page and it was parents are lost, young people thrust into an unknown world, and the war that they are facing is one where they are pit against the world. And I thought, oh, this is kind of like a modern Tomorrow When the World Began.
I'll take that. That's a very nice comparison. But it is, and one reason I love writing for this age group, like that 8 to 12, 8 to 13-year-old sort of age group, is like I just find that age is so incredible. They're not little kids anymore, but they're not teenagers, but they're still imaginative and they're still, you know, kind of creative and they're still brave, you know, and they're forming really strong opinions and they're forming themselves, you know, they're kind of starting to form this sort of in the future adult self. And so it's one thing whenever you write for kids too, you have to try and work out how do I get rid of the parents. A real adventurous novel like this anyway, because they're never going to let me out to live in a flooded city if mum and dad got anything to do with it, right? So Grimsdon was my easiest novel in a way of kids literally being able to run the show because, yeah, as the book opens, you realise these are kids living on their own and they've been separated from their parents because the initial flood happened on a school day, and so none of these kids were with their parents. So one of the big themes of the book is, of course, in the second book when they go to New City is they want to find their parents. They're desperate to find their parents.
And I love the characters too, and I really loved Isabella. And like you said before, you had, you know, really brave, courageous, resourceful, and, you know, characters that were wonderful. Take us through the character development. And then I know that you didn't plan the three books, but then you had to think of how does this character progress, I guess.
Yeah, it still matters. It still matters. And you don't want the characters to be the same in each book. And like you said, there does need to be an arc. It was just that I did it the wrong way around. Yeah, so, and you know what was, I'm so fascinated by writing. Like, so Isabella Charm is the main character in this book, and she's the one who is feisty and brave and loyal, and anyone harasses or mess with the kids that she looks after, you're going to gain yourself an enemy. So her best friend, Griffin, and Isabella, they look after three other little kids. And so The first two novels, Grimstone and New City, they're kind of Isabella's novel. They're really sort of from her point of view and how she leads this group of kids. And there's a very mouthy kind of very confident and very funny older boy called Xavier, who is literally, you know, thinks he's the savior of the show and thinks he's good with the ladies. And he's really fun to write. But as the book went on and as I started planning Final Storm, I just assumed, again, it was Isabella's book, different series of problems, different kind of challenges and stuff. But I reckon in the about the second or even the third draft, I realized, oh, this is not Isabella's book. This is Griffin's book. Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating to me because I was wondering why the first two drafts weren't working as well as I wanted it to work. And I realized, oh, because in the first two books, Griffin is the kind of the cautious one, the wary one, the one who worries all the time. But this is actually his turn to stand up and really shine because Isabella is in mortal danger in this book. Something very sneaky and underhanded happens and she is in terrible, terrible danger. And it's time for him to step up and do something completely courageous that absolutely terrifies him. And if he doesn't, Isabella's not going to make it. And so in the third draft, I didn't have to rewrite the book, but I had to rejig it because I thought, no. Griffin's character arc is that he's not brave. He's certainly what he thinks anyway. I'm not brave. But he, in the third book, it's like, sorry, buddy, it's your turn, it's your call, and you gotta kind of step up. So, and there's a younger character who is called B, who is in. She adores Isabella, and in this last book too, she actually does step up too, and she becomes like a little mini Isabella as well. And so, yeah, I think a lot of. It was almost not for Isabella to find her feet because she already had her feet in book one. It's for a lot of the other characters to kind of step up and their relationships change and they deepen. And, because it's still important. Character is still so important. And like you were saying, the character arcs and the development of them. But it's just happens that I didn't realize that until draft three exactly how these characters were going to develop. And that's not unusual for me when I'm writing a book to kind of plot it out. And the first draft is all about plot. And the second draft is kind of trying to tidy up that plot. And the third draft for me is kind of when I start bringing those characters to life and working out the little nuances between the characters. And so it's not unusual. It's just that I really didn't understand what Griffin's arc was until draft three.
I like it. I like how you can surprise yourself as well when you're going through the process.
Yeah.
Now, no matter how many angry letters you get from teenagers, I'm assuming the trilogy is over. It's called Final Storm. So you're done.
You have guessed correctly.
So what is next for you if there's not going to be a fourth book? Because trilogy sounds so much better than what do you call four books? I don't know.
Exactly. I don't even know.
A quadrology.
I don't know. But it is funny because, I mean, it is my little joke to myself that this book is called Final Storm because there were a couple other names, but I thought, you know what, this is Final Storm. And it lets me kind of make jokes to the kids saying, not the second last storm, this is the final storm.
This is it, guys.
This is it. Don't know more angry letters, kids. And so when I finished this book, I've had this little character in my head. It's 2 or even 3 years, but I didn't really pay her much attention because she's too young. I just thought, oh, look, I think you're very sweet, but I don't know who you are. And I don't write that kind of age group. Like I write pretty solidly 8 to 12 and then I've got one picture book. And so I kind of just realized like I there were a couple of mornings where I just woke up and it was literally as if she was kind of standing beside my bed with her hands on her hips saying, so now are you ready? Like it's just – and I thought, I think I have to probably at least play with this idea. And I've been fiddling with that, with the idea of this young girl, and she lives in a kind of a quite a European-ish style town square with a big park in the middle, and she knows all the people around the square. But it's a younger story, and so I think I'm going for it. I'm committing to it, and I'm thinking, you know what? Just play, because I think that's really important with anyone who creates. You just kind of fiddle and play, and let it go to where it wants to go and then sort of see what it is. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. And it is once I kind of committed to doing it, it is actually starting to come to life and all the other characters in her world. And yeah, but it's younger, like a junior novel series. So it's kind of freaking me out a little bit because I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, to be honest with you, every time I start a novel, I don't know what I'm doing. So I just think, come on, Deb, this is really no different to all the other novels.
Before you just kind of thought you knew what you're doing.
But I don't really.
I love that. And I love the idea of playing, you know, because writing, it is serious business and we need to make sure we get it right. But I do love the idea of, you know, playing and experimenting as well. And I think that's a good advice for young writers too.
Well, I think it's good for us, you know, slightly more experienced authors too. I think you can get into what's my next book and when will it come out and when will I pitch it and deadlines here and also making a living. And I think it can become, ironically, I think writing for kids sometimes can become a bit serious, like the business of it can be a bit serious. And I just this year really too, plus also Final Storm was quite a serious, you know, kind of topic. And so I'm actually really enjoying this time just, yeah, playing and kind of really, it's quite a joyful book. And I think it's just going to be a nice book. I think it's going to be this little character who's a real problem solver and a real cute little kind of munchkin. So, and with me too, I often do go from a noisy big book. Like one of my books is set during World War II and it's essentially a migration story. So it's about all that kind of stuff, surviving World War II, migrating to countries, a country you don't know, you know, being bullied in Australia post-World War II when my main character, Teresa, gets here. And after that, I wrote a book about a charming little girl with a beautiful family and she's a great speller. They're my spelling bee books. So I often go from a noisy, big kind of higher concept book to a gentler, smaller one. So it really doesn't surprise me too much that Final Storm was such a big, noisy ice tornado kind of book. And now I've not only gone gentler, I've gone younger.
I love that. And I really look forward to reading it. It sounds really amazing. But thank you so much, Deborah. It's been absolute pleasure chatting to you about your wonderful series, the action-packed adventure, but also exploring those beautiful issues. And for people who haven't, all those really serious issues, and I think for people who haven't checked out your website, there's a lot of great stuff on there for teachers and parents and kids to have a look at. So thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you and loved the series.
Oh, you're very sweet. Thank you so much, Danny. It's been such a pleasure to chat.